Welcome to the Nerd Party.
You must remember this. A kiss is still a kiss. A sigh is just a sigh.
Welcome to another episode of Missing Frames. This is the podcast where we watch all the movies we should have seen by this point in our lives. I'm your host, Sean Eastridge, and joining me, first time in 2019, is my lovely wife, Sarah Eastridge.
Hey.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
Welcome back to my space here.
Your house is lovely.
Thank you so much. I have an eye for decorations, if I do say so myself.
I'm sure.
But enough about me. Let's talk a little bit about a little ditty called Valentine's Day, which, by the way, this episode will not be released on Valentine's Day. I was going to say it's going to be released in the week of Valentine's Day, but that's not even true because Missing Frames comes out on a Sunday. So we're failing in multiple ways. But basically, this is our belated Valentine's Day episode. We wanted to do a romantic comedy of some sort. And continuing the tradition, I think this is the longest streak I've gone on Missing Frames where I'm the person who hasn't seen the movie. We haven't done one where I'm the expert of the movie so far this year. We're continuing that with Sarah's pick. Sarah, what are we watching?
Sleepless in Seattle.
Sleepless in Seattle,
yeah.
Which I have not seen. And I've actually, that's partially not true. I've seen maybe the first 15 minutes or so a while back.
How far back?
It's been, I'd say probably at least half a decade. It's been longer than that. It's before we were together. So it's got to be 8 years ago. I think I was in college. Like, I tried to watch it and I don't know. It just didn't click with me for some reason. But I'm not sure why.
It's got like two America's sweethearts.
Well, that's the thing. It has so many things in it that I should like. First and foremost, it's written and directed by Nora Ephron, who also wrote When Harry Met Sally, which is, as far as I'm concerned, one of the greatest movies of all time.
Yep.
And she also wrote and directed You've Got Mail down the line, which is another film that
features. So she's responsible for those two actors?
She's actually not the first one to have them together.
Oh.
It was John Patrick Shanley. Who had them in Joe versus the Volcano. I looked this up. I did my research for this episode. I knew they were in these three movies together, but I didn't know the release order.
Crazy.
Joe versus the Volcano is 1990.
Okay.
This Sleepless in Seattle is 1993. And then You've Got Mail is 1998.
Ugh.
And the only one I've actually seen from beginning to end is You've Got Mail, which I also really love.
I love that movie.
I think
a
lot of people have a soft spot for that movie because it's just so endearing, but yeah, so that's what I know about it. Nora Ephron, why am I saying Ephron? It's Ephron. I'm sorry. I apologize to all the Nora Ephron fans. I'm one of you, and I can't say her name right because I'm a terrible person. But I know that Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks are in it, and I know based on what I remember, he is a recent widower. He has a son, and he is like guesting on a radio show where he's doing a bit called Sleepless in Seattle. Somehow it gets picked up and he starts like sharing his experiences. And
right.
Meg Ryan falls in love with him. I can't remember if she's the DJ or
she worked for the paper, the Baltimore Sun, I think.
Okay. So she wants to get to know him.
Yeah.
That's what I remember about the movie. And I don't remember much else, but do you remember when you first, because you're a big fan of this movie, right?
Yeah, I was young. I don't want to spoil, it's not really a spoiler, but we'll talk about it more after the movie. But there's another film referenced in it that I was a huge fan of growing up because my mom showed it to me and I loved it, a classic. So that's kind of how it was the crosshairs. I was like, oh, wait, you know, they connect a little bit, and we'll talk about that more later. So I can't really answer your question.
Well, then this episode is over. Well, I think it's amazing. This movie was such a huge hit when it came out, which that part's not that amazing. I mean, it has Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks. I don't know. I mean, Meg Ryan, she'd been in When Harry Met Sally. Mm-hmm. So she was a star. Tom Hanks was, this is the year before he did Forrest Gump. But this is also the year, I think, Philadelphia came out, which was his first Oscar win. But he was right at the, starting to really hit the peak of his career. And he'd already done Big, which was wonderful. But I feel like this is right before Forrest Gump. So we're getting into crazy Tom Hanks territory. The movie had a $21 million budget and it made almost $230 million.
Just a little bit of worldwide. Money.
That's like a huge, huge hit. That's a lot of money for a movie that's this tiny to make. But it has pretty positive reviews. It has a 73% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is fine. And I don't know. I'm trying to remember what I didn't. I don't know, because I watched about 20 minutes and I kind of put it down to go do something else and then I never came back to it. And I just wasn't grabbed by the movie. I don't really remember why. I don't know if it was just, it didn't appeal
to
me.
Too, like, rom-com?
Maybe. Maybe it was a little too sweet for me, like a little too, like, oh, there's a little kid and he's, like, cute and saying catchphrases and things like, maybe that annoyed me. Because I remember the kid very distinctly, and I feel like he's like one of those kids who's like way too smart to be 11. so that may have annoyed me. And I don't know. Other than that, I don't really know. But I do want to watch it. Do you remember when the last time you saw it was?
Oh, it's been years. Maybe like 4 or 5 years. It's been a bit of time.
Okay.
But I've seen it a lot, I would say. Growing up, this was a movie that was on a lot, especially around Valentine's Day.
Yeah.
Romantic films.
Which is, as we've already established, is not today or even this week.
No, it's sometime next year, I suppose. Is this 2020.
Is this like top romantic movies for you? Like, would you put it in a top 10 or?
Oh, I don't know, because most of my favorite movies aren't like romantic movies, but yeah, I put it up there, but it's funny because I think, like with you, You've Got Mail, I'd put before this. I'd put When Harry Met Sally before this. If we're ranking the Tom Hanks movies, Meg Ryan movies.
When Harry Met Sally isn't a Tom Hanks movie.
I'm so sorry.
It's okay. But you know,
but
we can't forget Billy Crystal.
It's Meg Ryan.
It's Meg Ryan.
I got half
Nora
of
Ephron
it.
And Meg Ryan are
I got
involved.
I got one third of the throuple.
A little more than half. Actually, speaking of When Harry Met Sally, I did read that Rob Reiner, the director of When Harry Met Sally, is in this movie.
Oh.
And as one of the cast members. So that'll be exciting.
So my confusion all makes sense.
It all makes sense now. I'm going to ask you something. I don't know if I've ever asked you this on the show before with any movie that you've seen that I haven't. Do you think I will like this movie?
Probably not.
Okay.
That's just I feel like I have a pretty good pulse on what I enjoy,
what I don't enjoy. Okay.
I will say, I don't think you'll dislike it, but I think you'll be like, that was fine.
Okay. Well, you heard it here first, folks. We are going to actually find out for sure if I think this movie is fine or if I think it's great. So stay
or if it's terrible.
Or if I think it's terrible. That's completely possible. So stay tuned to find out.
Now available to own on video cassette.
And we're back. We need to talk about this movie, Sarah. We need to have a sit down.
Isn't that what this podcast is?
That's what this podcast is all about, is us working through our differences.
Oh, differences.
Yeah.
Oh,
this is one of the strangest romantic comedies I have ever seen in my entire life.
I never really felt like it was a comedy as much as it was like just romance, maybe.
Yeah, maybe that's part of it, but
I mean,
there's
some comedy
so
for sure,
much.
But
yeah, there's so many comedy elements, like the kid and his girlfriend, and her and Meg Ryan's friends. And I'll retcon what I said before. I actually like the kid. He's not that obnoxious. He was one of my the things I enjoyed more about the movie.
I don't think he acts anymore, or I think he just did a couple things as a kid.
Yeah,
and then
he
that
was in a movie called Bigfoot and Me that we Jim Varel, who we've had on the podcast before. We do this thing called Terrible Movie Nights, and this boy was the star of one of those terrible movies.
Career highlight.
What's his name? Ross Malinger. I apologize for butchering the name.
Sorry,
but
Ross.
But he was in this movie, and then wasn't really in much else, it looks like.
I think he just went back to normal civilian life.
Yeah, I guess so. But he was one of the things I actually really liked about the movie. The rest of the movie, I'm not going to say the words, but it was absolutely like bat guano crazy. Like, it was insane. There's a part of me that wants to applaud Nora Ephron for, and she co-wrote this. She didn't write it herself.
Right.
She co-wrote it with a couple of dudes. Let me look them up real quick. Of course, I don't have this pulled up. I'm just so baffled by this movie that I'm not organized at all.
Catch you off guard.
Jeff Arch. I can't pronounce anyone's names. I'm so sorry, everybody. David S. Ward. There, that's an easy one. What if it's like, it's actually Ward? God, this is, so they co-wrote the movie with her. The structure for this film, I did not realize they spent the entire movie apart. Mm-hmm. And that's a bold creative move.
It is.
I will applaud that decision, because for a romantic comedy to have its two leads spend the entire movie apart.
Opposite coasts.
Yeah, opposite coasts. They never interact. They don't talk on the phone. They don't do anything together. That's pretty big for like a big romantic comedy like that my mom probably loves. the leads never get together. That's also why this movie is not good. I didn't like it. And
so I was right in my prediction.
Yeah, but you
I
said,
had a feeling.
I want to point out, you said you thought I would describe this movie as fine, quote unquote.
Yeah,
I don't think I would describe it as fine. It's
but
sweet.
Fine sounds worse than bad to me, because fine is like a lack of caring about anything.
Yeah,
I don't
but
know.
This movie is so insane that I can't just call it fine. Like, it is a very strange movie. I don't even know where to start. I just was so baffled by the creative decisions they made in this movie. To have your two romantic leads, while I applaud it being separate, there is no reason for you to root for them to get together. Because on the one hand, he's off in his own world. You want him to find somebody, but you don't know who, and you don't necessarily need it to be Meg Ryan. Meg Ryan, on the other hand, is off in her own world, going behind her wonderful fiancé, might I add, wonderfully played by Bill Pullman, the President of the United States, saved our country during the fateful events of Independence Day, 1996. She's going behind his back, sneaking around, completely in love with this man she has heard on a radio program. I could not get behind her as a character. You naturally root for Tom Hanks because he's Tom Hanks and you like him and you want him to be happy because
he's a good dad.
Yeah, he's a good dad. And the movie opens, you're immediately in his court. Like, you know, it's right. Like you want to root for him because his wife just passed away and you want him to be happy. So I liked him and I liked his kid and I liked the relationship. But the whole movie is these two stories that don't intersect in an overt way. They never talk to each other. There's no relationship. There's no real reason for her to be in love with him. And then, and of course, disclosure, full spoilers, at the end, he sees her and it's love at first sight. And he's like, oh, I love her. Everything falls into place so simply without anyone having to earn anything. I just couldn't get into it. And it's like, I mean, it's shocking to me that Nora Ephron wrote When Harry Met Sally. I mean, I think she co-wrote it with Rob Reiner, but still, her spirit is all through that movie. It's in You've Got Mail. When Harry Met Sally would eat this movie for breakfast. Like, it's the anti Sleepless in Seattle, where it's like When Harry Met Sally is a deconstruction of all the tropes and all the cliches, and it explores relationships in a really insightful and wonderful and thoughtful way. And this movie's like the polar opposite, where it's like every cliche, nothing makes sense, and it's like a fairy tale. And they keep joking throughout the movie, like, oh, fate, fairy tales, da-da-da.
Right.
But then the movie is that. It was trying to like embrace that spirit, but they were all condescending about it. Like, oh, this movie is so, it's not, that's not how real life is. And then it's like, That's exactly what happens. Everyone gets what they want.
So you really liked it.
I loved it.
Aww.
I'm sorry. This is the Valentine's Day.
I'm just going to let you keep going.
Yeah. Well, the movie even takes place on Valentine's Day. So it's like,
well, I wasn't
worse.
Sure if you knew that
I didn't
or not.
Know that, no.
Okay.
So that worked out. At
it
least.
It did.
At least we picked a we picked,
good job.
Yeah. We did a decent job picking a Valentine's Day movie to watch.
So this movie is definitely weird, but I still love it.
So explain this to me. Expound on this a little bit. What is it about this movie that really works for you?
So I know you think the final scene is stupid.
No. I thought the final scene was sweet.
Because the final scene, I think, is what always stuck out to me the most. Like, I liked the whole movie. I always enjoyed it. I watched it from a young age. I'm cool with Hallmark films, so my bar isn't like crazy high with realistic expectations of love. But I always thought the final scene was really touching and beautiful because they finally physically see each other and there's this like moment of recognition where they just know inherently. And I just always thought that was really beautiful and that felt like love. And you didn't have the like the grand kiss or the big, you know, kind of finale that you would want. I mean, you do say this movie has bold moves. That's
yes.
another one.
Yeah.
Like there's no spoilers. There's no kiss, you know. Yeah. It's just like two souls kind of having this beautiful, loving recognition of one another. Like that's what they've been missing their whole lives. And it ends on that note. And I always thought that was really beautiful.
I would have been okay. Like, I mean, the ending is real sweet and it's very touching. It's moving. And Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks are great.
Yeah.
The problem is I never felt I was never rooting for their relationship specifically.
Yeah.
This movie feels like a proto You've Got Mail. I feel like I've heard people make that joke. I mean, You've Got Mail is also
I can see your point.
Nora
yeah.
Ephron. It's about two people who don't know each other in person. But the key difference, I feel like she maybe pitched something like similar to You've Got Mail and they're like, that'll never work. And so these two guys, whoever they are, their names, who I already forgot, Jeff Arch and David S. Ward came in and they rewrote it to be like, what if they do this? I'm completely making this up. I don't think this is true. But it just reflects in You've Got Mail the way that plays out. Because to me, Sleepless in Seattle feels like a weak version of You've Got Mail, like a first draft version of You've Got Mail. You have two characters. This movie's oddly structured. The scenes are very repetitive. It's Tom Hanks being sad. He misses his wife. He needs to be with her. Meg Ryan. There's literally a scene where she first hears him in the car. She's driving and she hears his Sleepless in Seattle thing, which is she's very moved by it. And then literally it's the same scene later. She cries again.
Because
listening
it's like a recap
again.
On the show or
exactly.
something.
Exactly. They recap it and they replay the entire thing.
Actually,
and she cries again. And
I
it's like, this is the same scene.
I noticed that too. And I was like, oh, and it's funny because, and I'm like a little mad at you because sometimes I'm like, I love this movie. Let's do it for the episode. And then I watch it and I'm way more critical because I have to like really pay attention to talk about it. And I'm like, crap. Like, don't you dare
this
ruin
is,
my film.
Ladies, I know you're out there. This is this is why it's just a joy to be married to me. If you,
he ruins all your favorite films.
All your favorites. I was thinking about it because this is what happens when I don't like a movie. I'm like, what would have worked better? And I realized You've Got Mail. That is the version of this movie that works better. And it was done better. And I feel like Nora Ephron almost, I don't know. She got nominated for this movie got nominated for an original screenplay Oscar.
Yeah.
That's baffling to me.
And didn't it
an
win
original
a
screenplay.
BAFTA or something? I don't
know
if it was
think
this
it
movie.
Won,
she won a BAFTA for something.
It definitely, so it was nominated at the BAFTAs. It didn't win.
Okay.
But I think maybe it was the goodwill of When Harry Met Sally. Like people love that so much. And I think that got nominated or it won. I could be wrong about that. But You've Got Mail, the key to why that movie works is that they do know each other and we know they know each other, but they don't know it.
Right.
But even beyond that, so they're interacting and they're perfect for each other and we want to root for them. We love them both. We want them to be together. But then the beauty of that movie is the conflict it presents when they do meet in real life and they hate each other.
Yeah.
And you have to go through the journey of them kind of finding each other's, I think I can't remember exactly, but I think it's Tom Hanks knows it's her and he purposefully is a jerk. And then he realizes and they fall in love very naturally in a beautiful way. But the point is that they know each other and they get to know each other. It's not that they spend the movie apart the entire time. And then at the end, it's like a very absurd, like, we're in love. Everything. I'm going to abandon my fiance. And my fiance is in perfect Bill Pullman fashion. Bill Pullman is the true hero of this movie.
He's like, that's okay, yeah, sweetie. Yeah. Go get him.
Bill Pullman, who has been... The worst thing about Bill Pullman is he has allergies. I don't know, because the movie never establishes, like, early on, she's like, oh, I'm so happy with him, and da-da-da, and she's talking with her mom, and her mom's talking about, like, oh, when I met your dad, it was magic, and da-da-da.
Yeah.
And she's like, oh, well, we're very practical, and... I guess the movie
no
was,
surprises.
Yeah,
was
I guess the
thing.
Movie was trying to establish that she doesn't like that, but it didn't make it clear. And look, this is one cliche I would have given it. If they had made Bill Pullman's character at least slightly less likable, I would have understood her need to, like, but they never really established that he's anything less than perfect, that she is really dissatisfied or has a good reason to be dissatisfied. Her reason is like, everything is just the way it should be, and I don't like that. Which, it's like, okay, that kind of makes sense. But you need to have something that you want to root for her happiness. I didn't want to root for her happiness. The whole time I'm thinking, she is a terrible person. She's practically cheating on her fiancé, who is a god from the heavens. And she's sneaking around for about this guy she's never met before. I mean, help me. Help me understand why people love this movie.
I don't know. I just have a rational love for certain things. And this
a
is
rational
one of...
or an irrational love?
Irrational.
Okay.
Or irrational.
Yeah, maybe it
depending
is rational.
Depending on,
know.
Yeah. Also, just to piggyback on the whole, like, you ruin movies for me.
Happy Valentine's
yeah!
Day.
True love. No, I also, like, I guess I never registered how much she psycho stalks him.
Yes.
Like, I had forgotten she
pre-social
hires.
Pre-social media stalking.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, this is so creepy. Like, this is the stuff you go to jail for.
Yeah.
She hired a private investigator, and he's, like,
to
snapping
photos of him.
Yeah. She watches him and his kid at the beach from a distance. Like, all of this, I was kind of like, oh no, because I put on these, like, Sean glasses. I'm like, what is Sean thinking? And I'm like, Sean thinks she's psycho.
She is psycho, though. That's the thing.
Yeah.
And even her, you know, Rosie O'Donnell is her best friend, and
yeah.
she goes, am I crazy? No, you're not crazy. And like, you said, you were like, yeah, you are. And I was like, exactly. That's the problem. I think that the key.
It should have been a little more honest.
The key issue to this movie is one that they don't ever meet. Or don't ever interact. They never have a genuine reason to fall in love with each other other
yeah.
than, like, oh, magic.
Well,
but the other reason is because she is psycho.
Yeah.
And she behaves abhorrently throughout the movie. And I never wanted to root for her happiness because I thought she was behaving so terribly and treating the people around her so badly. Like, the people who were close to her.
I remember when I was watching this as a kid, I always thought... at least the first few times I saw it, because I was pretty young, I always thought that instead of having the whole film just go the whole time without them speaking, that the kid was going to write in. And, like, because they almost, I always felt like they alluded to that, where he's like, no, write her back. And the dad's like, no, blah,
yeah.
blah, blah. And it's like, I always thought, and yes, he does go and make the big trip at the end to the Empire State Building. But I always thought, I'm like, maybe if he started dialogue with her, then that would connect them. But then that never happened.
Yeah.
And I remember distinctly thinking, oh, I bet that's what's going to happen. And just didn't.
Yeah. I thought the same thing. I thought he was going to read the letter and be like, oh, huh. But then maybe
yeah.
they could have played it in a way where he's like, oh, but it's a fairy tale. She doesn't really exist. It's
mm-hmm.
just a letter. She's not a person. We don't know who she is. But he doesn't even read the letter. I feel like that should have been a scene in the movie where
yeah.
he, you know, the first time his son the whole time is like, this is her, I love her, she's great. And his dad's always like, okay, whatever, I don't care. And then he actually takes the letter from his son and looks at it and he goes, oh, I like this and that, blah, 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 she's crazy. It's like he doesn't even read it.
Yeah.
I thought they were setting it up that maybe the next scene he would actually pick it up and look at it and read through it and be like, oh, there's actually something to this person.
Yeah.
But he doesn't.
And then you couple that with a scene where he actually physically sees her
yes.
at the airport and has that insta-love thing.
That's another.
And then it would be like, oh, okay.
That's
you know.
The other problem is the movie on her side is her behaving very superficially. Like the this relationship that we're supposed to be rooting for is based totally in superficiality. With her, she heard this guy on the radio and she's so in love. Oh, she loves him. I love him. He's sad because his wife died and I just want him to be happy. So she's in love with him and decides to throw her whole life away because she wants to be with this guy she heard on the radio. He, on the other side, is trying to navigate the world of dating and da-da-da. And then he sees her and it's love at first sight. I'm getting so crazy. I'm starting to punch things. I got Sarah Flowers and I punched the pot. That's how angry this movie made me. It made me want to punch flowers.
I'm glad I could share this with you. Really. Happy Valentine's Day.
But that's the thing is their love for each other is based on superficiality. And the movie tries to play it off as it's magic, it's fate. They throw in all these different things about oh, it's a sign, which I totally see as a rewrite. Nora Ephron being oh, maybe we should just put that in there to justify why they just go together. I love romantic comedies. I love You've Got Mail. I mean, that's one of my all-time favorite movies. I feel like a lot of people are it's sappy, but it works for me. And to me, the key to a great romance or a great romantic comedy is the relationship between the two. You can't have them functioning in isolated areas the entire movie, and then you especially can't have one of the characters be someone you don't want to root for, or the things, there's nothing worth rooting for, because I don't feel like she has anything to gain. You know, it's I don't root for her because she has a great life. She has a great life. There's nothing she needs to aspire to. And that makes it tough. And I wanted to root for them. And they're Meg Ryan and Tom Hanks. So, and intuitively, I think you want to root for them. I think that's probably why they were cast, because it's well, it's not in the script, but if we cast two likable people, the two most likable people.
It's also funny because I never realized that they barely acted together this whole film. Yeah. They probably barely talked.
Yeah, I was looking at IMDb during the movie because I was just really trying to look engaged for facts about this that I could talk about. But I did get spoiled that it's Tom Hanks and Meg Ryan only spend 2 minutes together in the movie. Again, I think that's kind of cool. If I could separate myself from it and someone says, oh yeah, Sleepless in Seattle is a movie where the two romantic leads don't actually interact until the very end of the movie. It's oh, that's kind of a fun idea. I just don't think the execution paid off.
Tell me how you really feel.
But there are other things that I did like about it. I liked the soundtrack. I did think the movie got very repetitive. It would basically you'd have a scene of Tom Hanks walking around his house sad and looking out the window. Then you'd cut to Meg Ryan. She's walking around her house sad, looking out the window, and they play these really charming songs on the soundtrack to, I guess, distract you from the fact that it's the same scenes over and over again. This turned into something I didn't like about it. What did I like about the movie? Bill Pullman, we've already established that. I really loved the opening scene where they're talking about Bill Pullman's allergies and the guy goes, "Bees. I'm allergic to bees," just very seriously. I thought that was hilarious. And I was like, oh, that's good. This is going to be funny. It wasn't. I love that Tom Hanks has a mullet in this movie.
Yeah,
which is
the
great
curl
Tom
mullet.
Hanks mullet is one of the first things one of the first notes I wrote with an exclamation point. And then Rita Wilson is in the movie.
I have Rita
great.
Wilson with two exclamation
wow.
points.
Yeah, I only have one, but it was very exciting.
And Victor Webster, who I adore. Yeah. And I had completely forgotten he was in this, probably because I am used to a Victor Webster with white or gray hair.
Yes.
And I was like, oh my gosh, he has brown hair. I don't know if I've ever seen that before, ever.
Yeah. So I and then Rob Reiner is in the movie, which was great. It was just fun to see him. But I really don't know. It's hard to really. It's not hard. I'm doing it. I'm beating up on the movie, but there is a sweetness running through it, kind of a carefree, it feels a little bit like a throwback, that's what it's trying to do.
Yeah.
And they reference, this is super weird, so not only did we pick a movie that I guess you picked it, but you must have known, since it happens on Valentine's Day, or that's when it's supposed to happen, the other movie we were talking about watching for this episode of Missing Frames was An Affair to Remember,
yeah,
which is heavily referenced
heavily
in the movie.
And that's why before the jump, I was like, well, I don't want to say what it is because it's very prevalent
in this
film.
How really creepy it is that An Affair. I kind of wish we'd watched An Affair to Remember.
I suppose we should have chronologically.
Because this movie spoils An Affair to Remember.
Would you like the Wikipedia entry from Affair to Remember?
That was another moment where I was like, what is this? There's a running gag throughout the movie that is very funny where they talk about how women love An Affair to Remember and men just don't get it.
Yeah.
But then for no reason at all, it was almost as if Nora Ephron foresaw my viewing of this film and was like, well, if he's not going to like it and he's going to complain about it and moan about it on his podcast, I'm just going to make
Serves
this as
right.
miserable as possible. And I'm going to literally have Rita Wilson monologue about the ending of An Affair to Remember for no reason. At all. It serves no purpose. Literally, Rita Wilson, and you kind of turn to me, you're like, oh, this kind of spoils it. Rita Wilson just goes, she's like, An Affair to Remember is amazing because, and then she just talks and talks about the ending of the movie, describing it in detail, scene, beat by beat.
Yep.
And I'm sitting there saying, what is the point of this other than to make me angrier? That was the only point of it. So.
But when they make fun of her and start crying,
which
that's
apparently
really funny.
They do, they talk about The Wild Bunch.
Yeah.
Was that, it? That was very funny. Yeah. And apparently that was completely improvised.
Was it? That's one of my favorite parts of the film.
Mine too. I thought that was really
very
great
good.
When the men start talking about The Wild Bunch and how emotional it is. And they start getting emotional and crying and it's very funny. But I don't. No, I'm struggling.
I can tell.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't have to like it. It's fine.
No, and I didn't like it.
The couch is all made up for you. Like, no big deal. Don't even sweat it.
But I you know, it kind of, what do you think it is about this movie that speaks to people? I mean, the movie made over $200 million at the box office. That seems like a runaway, insane.
Was it released Valentine's Day or anything?
It was released in summer.
Oh, okay.
Summer 19. It was 1993. So it was the movie 3 weeks into Jurassic Park's reign at the box office. It knocked it off the top.
Maybe it was just all the people that were like, ugh, dinosaurs. Yeah. Let's go watch a rom-com.
Oh, no. It ranked second behind. That's right. No movie would knock Jurassic Park off the top. It ranked second behind Jurassic Park.
So all the women went to.
That's got to be it. It was the alternative to.
That's
the dinosaur movie, which, by the way, has a more believable romance than this movie.
I get it.
Well, tell me, what do you think it is about this movie that appeals to people?
I mean, I would say like the star power, but I don't know if these people really had star power as much back then. Did
and
they?
Funny
I just don't know.
So this
timeline.
Movie was nominated for a couple Oscars, but this was the same year that Tom Hanks won for Philadelphia.
Oh, all right. So, I mean, I would say right off the bat, like if this was released today and it was those two people, I'd be like, I'm going, you know? So like, that makes sense.
I think
make
this
money.
Capitalized a lot.
Yeah.
Because Meg Ryan was a star at this point too because of When Harry Met Sally.
And it's a romance.
Yep.
And there's a kid.
Cute
little kid. That's actually pretty funny.
Yeah. That's what I'll say. I will give this movie that. They wrote, he's a little precocious and like a little too smart for his own good.
Yeah.
But
he's a little too adult, but in a good way.
He walks the fine line very well. Like, he's not written obnoxious. He's actually very sweet.
I like him.
And the kid was good.
Yeah.
Who played him.
Yep.
So you think that's it's the actor.
I think that's why it made money. Yeah.
Yeah.
Why do I like it? I don't know. It's just one of the I have a whole little like archive of films that I just love without any true reason, or you know, it's just something that makes me feel good and that I love, and that like when I have a sick day I can curl up and watch this movie and like all my troubles can melt away and everything can be kind of just fluffy and nice for a little while. And that's one of those films for me. And then the ending just gets me. I'll always love that ending.
If I had only seen the ending of this movie, it would have been fine. Like, I would have gotten everything I needed to get out of this movie.
Without the ending, I will say, I don't think I'd love this movie as much. You know, it's just, it's such a standout for me that I forgive a lot more about this film.
Yeah. The ending definitely, like, I even as someone who was pretty much unmoved by the entire movie, I was definitely touched by the ending.
Well, and it plays to the actors too.
It does.
Like, and how much they can convey in their face.
Again,
alone
it's so effective because it's like they can see each other. Yeah. You know, I get that.
You're like, why did this happen at minute 48?
Yeah, I know. Well, I get the idea. I guess I mean, the pitch is like, it's a love story where the two characters don't meet till the end. It's like, that's kind of like, oh, how's that going to work? But it doesn't, you know, you've got to either want to root for the characters to get together for some reason.
Or have some kind of line of communication.
I thought it was going to be like, she calls into the radio show and maybe mm-hmm. they have a conversation.
Yeah.
Like on the radio.
So there's some tether.
That seems like a missed opportunity because he only goes on the program. He's only sleepless in the Seattle once. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, women love you and you're getting fan mail. But then they kind of drop that storyline completely. He goes on a date with
Victoria.
Yeah. Was that a coworker or a friend? It seemed like he knew her like before.
I can't remember.
Yeah. Something. He goes on a date. But it's like they drop the whole Sleepless in Seattle angle completely. Other than that first. I thought he was going to go back on. Like he was like, oh, I don't like this. But then he opens up. He's like, I actually kind of do like it. He was going to be a recurring character. Somehow Annie gets on board and like gets in touch with him through the show. She actually talks to him and is like, well, I don't know, you know.
Well, it makes sense because she is a writer, like yeah. by profession, so just, which really the only thing she really only used her professional credentials to like stalk him.
Yeah.
Illegally.
So, you know, she's not
she hired a PI.
She's not racking up any points as far as my sympathies go, but you know, it would have just made more sense to have something connecting the two of them.
I would agree with that.
And the other problem is, if you're not going to connect the two of them, if you are going to commit to that angle of they don't meet till the end, there has to be. Tom Hanks is pretty solid. His scenes are a little repetitive because it's a lot of him walking around his house to like a classic tune.
But he
sells
it.
He's great. I mean, he's Tom Hanks. But the problem is Meg Ryan, Annie, she has nothing. She doesn't have anything to work up from. Like, she's not at a low point. She's at a very high point. And you like her husband. You don't want her to leave her husband. I didn't. He sneezes.
Fiance.
Like, that's such a super... That's so sexist. Or, yeah, fiance. That's sexist to say the man sneezes and I can't be with him. I don't know how it's sexist. I'm just going to make it a sexism thing.
Sexist
because that's what we
sexy.
Do now here on the internet. We're going to make it controversial. But I don't know, Sarah, this movie.
I think
was
you
so
do
strange.
Know you didn't like it.
Well, I
it's
didn't like
fine.
No, I know that. I just don't know how people really latched on
you
to this.
You just can't understand.
I think it's their charm. I think it's their charm. But you can't even say it's the. I almost said it's their chemistry, but it's not. There's no chemistry between them until the end.
The two minutes of chemistry.
But I guess I really loved. I mean, I think Tom Hanks is great, and I really like Meg Ryan. I wish they had a little bit more to play with, but they do get more to play with in the semi-sequel, You've Got Mail. So I feel like that kind of redeems this movie a little bit, is that they really did get a good chance to showcase their chops. But what scenes in this movie or what moments in this movie stand out? Besides the ending, is there anything about this movie that really stands out to you?
I do like the... Well, when he calls into the radio show,
yeah.
Dr. Marcia Fieldstone, mm-hmm. I think. I think that's really, it's very sweet and very funny.
Yeah.
Because the kid and they're kind of like at odds.
And I love the way that she blocks it where they're like walking towards each other.
Yeah, yeah. I just always like that scene. Let's see what else.
You know what I really loved? A lot of it is his character and the kid.
The
scene where he says, I think I'm starting to forget her.
Yeah.
Like these really emotional,
very touching,
like, touching moments in this very superficial movie. Like, it's like, the movie keeps pulling me.
I know, when he hugs her, or he hugs his kid. I'm just
The movie, like, pulls me back and forth because I don't know how I'm supposed to be investing in this. Am I supposed to be going along with the unreality of it? Like, you know, but these very brutal, real things that you want it to be more real. You want it to pay off in that way. Because you want it to feel earned mm-hmm. After everything he's gone through. But I don't know. I did like that scene a lot. I the ending, of course, and then what else? Yeah, I liked that radio scene. The opening, I thought the opening did real well, just establishing him. I loved the opening shot of them at the gravestone at the graveyard. And then it cranes up
and
you see the city, the backdrop of Chicago behind them. I thought that was such a great shot.
And all the other people that were at the funeral, like, you almost feel like it's just them at a gravestone. Then you realize it's the actual funeral.
Yeah. But any scene with the two of them, when they yell at each other, when he's upset, and he's like, I hate you.
Yeah.
I thought that was great. And he's listening to his dad six or seven times. It's like, hey, I loved that. Anything with the two of them I thought was great.
They have the real chemistry.
Yeah, they're the real love story. Don't quote me on that. Yeah, everything else, I don't know. I needed them to make me want them to be together. And there was no reason for them to be together as far as I was concerned. I wanted him to be with somebody, but there's no reason it needed to be her. And the whole time the movie actively argues against me wanting her to be with him.
Yeah, so. I can see that. I mean, tough. I don't agree with you, but I suppose I still respect you.
I appreciate that, especially for Valentine's Day, which I want to reestablish is already passed, and we're not even in Valentine's Day week. So thank you.
So you've ruined 2020
Everything
for
is
me.
Ruined.
Congratulations.
Yes, it's all over. It's all over. Well, in that case, I guess if there's nothing else to say, let's go ahead and rate the movie.
Okay.
I think we should do bee allergies because, again, I think that's the best. My favorite line in the movie is I'm allergic to bees.
Or H and G's. Highs and goodbyes.
Yeah, highs and goodbyes. Oh, can you, the abbreviation?
No.
Please tell
I
the story.
I don't remember, though.
It's oh, all right.
Oh,
all right.
M-F-E-O.
M-F-E-O. This is it. So she goes, the letter.
The little
the,
girl
the boy
is always...
writes on behalf of his dad to Annie. He says MFEO, which I can't remember what it really means, but Sarah's like, oh, you know what that means, right? And I was like, no. And she goes, what was it? MFer
end all.
End all.
MFers
end all. Which MF is something we can't say on the show, but also, strangely enough, are the initials of Missing Frames. And those of you who listen to the show, I affectionately refer to as MFers. I thought that was funny. That was one of the funniest parts, and it didn't even happen in the movie.
You're welcome.
It just happened in real life.
I provide extras
so
on the films.
We can do MFers, bee allergies. How many on
Bill
a scale
Pullman's.
Of 1 to 5? Yes. One. What? Yeah. How many Bill saintly fiancés would you give this movie?
A 3.
Okay. I'd give it probably a 2.
Okay. If I had said 5, just out of curiosity, what would you have thought?
I would have been baffled. Anyone who gives this movie a 5, anyone who calls this like the top, the best romantic movie, I can't. I don't understand it. This feels like the start of like a string of really like corny, cheesy romantic movies where it's more about like, oh, they're in love. It doesn't matter. And I feel like the same person who is responsible for like breaking that genre down and really analyzing it in a wonderful way with When Harry Met Sally then reinforced all the same stereotypes with this movie. And it makes me kind of sad, but you know what?
I mean, it made a lot of money.
You've got mail is a great movie. And when we return on Missing Frames on MFR, we will be able
no.
to talk all about how much I love. That'll be a between takes episode. We'll just talk about how much I love You've Got Mail. But that's it. Thank you, Sarah.
Thank
I'm
you,
sorry.
Sean.
Happy Valentine's Day, sweetheart.
Oh, you're such a doll.
I'm so sorry. But I love you so much, and I thank you for taking the time to be on this show. Thank you for being such a better character than Meg Ryan. I want to thank everyone for listening. Thank you for tuning in. Feel free if you like what you're hearing to give us a 5-star rating on iTunes. That helps us out. You don't have to give us 5 stars, but you should. I would be very grateful. You can also find me at YeChandraMan on Twitter if you want to bash me for my cold, cold heart not loving this movie. And you can also check out the Nerd Party at Join Nerd Party on Twitter and the Nerd Party on Facebook. You can like that page. Keep track of all the awesome stuff we're doing. We churn out content pretty much daily here at the Nerd Party, so check it all out. And Sarah, if people want to find you on the Twitter and tell you how lucky you are to be married to such a
can't wait
a wonderful wonderful guy,
with
I'm the
Love
Bill
Alone.
Pullman of podcasting
with Love Alone on Twitter.
There you go. So I that's it. I want to put that on a plaque. I'm the Bill Pullman of podcasting. Bill Pullman is the hero of this movie.
Hi and goodbye.